It is Friday, yay, which means time to talk about headlines that made news this week here in the Gem State. Here to break down what those headlines have been are Kevin Richard with Idaho Education News and Bill Manny with the Idaho Statesman. Welcome.
Thank you.
I would like to start our conversation with an often kind of not talked about position, the Secretary of State's office. Kevin, can you get us up to date on what happened, frankly, first off?
It's been a very turbulent week for the Secretary of State's office. And you're right. This is one of those offices that doesn't get any media attention or make any headlines unless something goes wrong. And something really did go wrong earlier this week. The Secretary of State's office, Tim Hurst, their elections person, told reporters that gubernatorial candidate Tommy Ahlquist was under investigation for possible violations of campaign finance law. He recanted on this a couple of hours later and said that he misspoke and that there was no investigation. But, you know, take a step back here. I mean, the Secretary of State is sort of a jack of all trades in state government, covers a lot of different areas, but probably the most high profile job that office has, and really the most important job in that office right now, you know, this week, is ensuring fair elections. And to have that kind of a misstatement right before the election, when it could influence voting decisions, is, you know, the height of not running a fair election. I mean, I'm not saying that this is going to affect the outcome one way or the other, but surely there were voters who heard the first thing, may not have heard the recant, and voted based on the initial information. That is a big problem.
And that's exactly what I was going to say. And Bill, maybe you can talk a little bit about that, is that the information, the misinformation got out there. The media covered it because it came from the Secretary of State's office. So
you can't not cover that when the chief state election official is saying that there could be a serious problem. On the other hand, we promptly cover the response. The last week of an election, you always have to be super careful about any new information about a candidate, because the closer you get to election day, the less time anybody has to correct the record. So it's a serious issue.
Kevin, you had
maybe a couple hour window here between the initial report from the Secretary of State's office and them retracting the initial statement. So they did retract it fairly quickly, but you saw this 2 hour window during early voting. I mean, theoretically, somebody could have voted between the first and the second account, and then hear the second thing and like, wait a minute, you know. And if it happens to one voter, it's you know, inherently an unfair step in the election process.
Well, then it can be confusing, I think, because I think you're absolutely right that you may, as a you know, as a consumer of news, read or seen the first statement, but we have such a fast moving news cycle in the culture that we live in now. Maybe you missed that 2 hour later recant. And that's probably what we could have potentially seen here, or something like that.
I mean, we all live in deathly fear of making an error or mistake that's going to affect a candidate. This is a tough window and a tough dynamic, and you have to be extra careful.
How has it affected the Secretary of State's office this week? Has there been backlash for that, or because they recanted so quickly? What has that been like?
I think it's hard to tell what the fallout is going to be, if any. And, you know, it's not going to have an immediate effect on the Secretary of State's election. Lawrence Denny is up for re-election, but he's unopposed in the primary. So now we're a long ways out from the general election. I don't know how much any of this becomes a factor. I mean, there are actually a lot of issues in that Secretary of State's race when you come down to when you look ahead to the fall. I mean, there are going to be questions asked about the Trump Voter Fraud Commission and the information that had been passed along. That was an issue, again, going back a ways.
Lawrence Denny has always been kind of a polarizing figure, and especially as House Speaker, you know, had his fans and had his detractors. He's been a little more low key and a little bit more bipartisan, probably, as Secretary of State. But this doesn't help. Tim Hurst, on the other hand, has a sterling reputation as being you know, a fair by the book guy. So I don't think anybody is going to read too much into that. But nonetheless, it's not a good development.
No.
I'm speaking with Kevin Richert with Idaho Education News and Bill Manny with the Idaho Statesman, getting everyone up to date on news that happened this week here in Idaho. Another thing that happened here in Idaho, speaking of elections, is kind of a, I don't know if we'd call it a mass exodus from Paulette Jordan's campaign, but we've had some people leave this week. Bill, what happened there?
A couple staffers leaving what had been kind of an insurgent campaign. They came on early. My sense, and I think we'll know more. She's having a press conference today to talk about her campaign, and I think she's going to address some of these questions. My sense is you had this kind of seat of the pants campaign that now is getting more attention and more money. And they are trying to professionalize the staff. So they're hiring, they're bringing more people in. And I think some of this is just growing pains. And we may hear more, but so far that's what we've heard. I know that they're announcing today that former state senator John Peavy is becoming the treasurer for that campaign, replacing somebody who'd been a volunteer treasurer. So my sense is there's more money and attention, and she's trying to straighten things out.
And you bring up a good point that this really did kind of start as a grassroots campaign. In fact, she waffled back and forth. Will I run? Won't I run? Will I stay in the legislature? Won't I stay in the legislature?
Right.
And now there is national attention behind her campaign.
There's national attention behind her campaign, and there's also very deep and very visible and sometimes very personal divisions emerging within the Democratic Party heading into this Tuesday primary. I never would have thought we'd be sitting here in May talking about a controversial statewide Democratic primary. And, you know, obviously there's been a lot of tension and a lot of discord within the Republican primary for governor. But right now, the Democratic primary is every bit as personal. Mm-hmm. And the Democratic Party, whoever wins on Tuesday, is going to have a very difficult job of trying to pull factions together. Democrats already facing an uphill battle trying to win any statewide race, including governor. This makes the job that much tougher for whoever winds up getting that nomination.
Yeah, this is still Republicans' race to lose, but this is the most competitive Democratic primary for governor we've seen in at least a generation. And Cynthia Sewell had a story looking back. It was 1998 before you had more than two candidates and really before you had a major candidate and an also ran. Mm-hmm. So the dynamic has been different. And you just think about the personal biography. You have a young woman who coming from North Idaho with tribal experience, completely different kind of candidate than Idaho is used to having. And so it's natural that she's getting attention and support. And in fact, the Statesman, our endorsement editorial this morning endorsed Jordan over Belukoff.
And why? Tell us about that.
A.G. Belukoff, nice guy, long time Democrat, in Boise, longtime member of the Boise School Board, but our board just concluded that you have a chance to be different, to be fresh, to take a new look at a campaign that has been pretty traditional and pretty staid in the past. And she has this incredible biography and personal story and is invigorating people in a way that A.J. Belukoff didn't 4 years ago, and we didn't see him doing it again this year.
And Kevin, talk a little bit about what happened with that division in the Democratic Party. There was an email that Jordan's campaign sent out. I believe the headline said it had come from the Democratic Party, and then there was a retraction. And before then, the Democratic Party was like, we're not endorsing anyone until after the primary, but then boom.
The party does not endorse in a primary, but the endorsement process within the Democratic Party has exposed a lot of the divisions that I'm talking about within the Democratic Party, because sitting legislators who served alongside Paulette Jordan have endorsed Belukoff. I don't believe that there's any sitting legislator who's endorsed Jordan. And you have, on top of that, a lot of very established Democrats in various areas of public service have endorsed Belukoff. And you see a lot of those kind of big name establishment Democrats show up on his campaign finance report this week. Now you also see $2 million of his own dollars in the Sunshine report. But so you see this schism between the establishment wing of the Democratic Party and maybe this younger insurgent group within the Democratic Party. And I think that's kind of coming to the fore right now.
I had a chance to ask Paulette Jordan about the about her lack of colleagues endorsing her, and she said that you know, she doesn't try to be nice. She can be firm when other people might expect someone to be warm. And she said she's been an outsider. She hasn't been there very long. She hasn't gotten to know those people as well. And so she described it as more of a relationship thing than a philosophical thing. The people who aren't endorsing her and who are endorsing Blukoff aren't speaking on the record about why. So at this point, we're having to rely on what we know. My sense is they don't feel like she's been a team player. And I think that outsider status is explains partly that dynamic.
And it's fascinating, though, to get back to both of your points, that I don't think anyone would have thought that in May, 4 days out from a primary election, that we actually have two viable Democratic candidates to move on.
And we have seen in recent political trends, look no further than the White House, that sometimes that outsider theme resonates with voters. And it's interesting, you've got Paulette Jordan definitely playing that theme on the Democratic side. Tommy Ahlquist has been, you know, pounding on that theme from the start of his campaign on the Republican side. So, you know, we'll see how that plays out on Tuesday in both parties.
Idaho's primary election is 4 days away, and it seems it's anyone's guess who will move on to November's general election. Joining me in studio to talk about Tuesday's election and some other issues are Bill Manny with Idaho Statesman, Kevin Richard with Idaho Education News. Thanks again for sticking around and talking about this. When we went into the last break, we were talking about the Paulette Jordan campaign and where she is and the fact that the Idaho Statesman did endorse her today. Bill, I wanted to talk to you about the fact that the Statesman endorses a Republican and a Democratic gubernatorial candidate. Talk a little bit about who you endorsed as well.
Correct. In those statewide open races with competitive races we did, and in the Republican primary for governor, we endorsed Lieutenant Governor Brad Little. And so for our board, the outsider challenge novelty factor that we credited in the Jordan race was not enough of a persuasion to decide us in the Republican side. So we endorsed Brad Little for his experience, for his knowledge, for his command of the issues, for his breadth of experience, and just all of us have had experiences with seeing Brad Little working effectively, and that ultimately was the persuasive factor.
How about the fact that we have a closed primary? How could that potentially play into the results on Tuesday? Maybe, Kevin, you could talk a little bit about that.
We've been debating about that since the closed primary, and the conventional wisdom has always been that the closed primary favors the more conservative candidates. In 2014, we had a whole slate of conservative challengers or conservative candidates, in many cases going against incumbents. I mean, it was Russ Fulcher running against Butch Otter. It was Chris Troupas running against Lawrence Wasdin. And what you saw in that 2014 election was that pretty much all of the quote-unquote establishment Republican candidates won, the sole exception probably being Lawrence Denny winning in the Secretary of State's race. So I'm not sure if that conventional wisdom about the closed primary necessarily giving a conservative candidate an inside track, that's not an absolute. Now, it probably does help Congressman Labrador in this closed primary where you've got two extremely well-known, proven candidates with built-in constituencies that come with having won tough elections in the past. So I don't know. I don't think there's enough data to pigeonhole these close primaries and say that they are going to help a conservative candidate automatically.
There was an actual organized effort to try to get moderates and liberals to cross over and register and vote in the Republican primary among those people who really wanted to try to stop Raul Labrador. And I think once those folks saw a competitive race shaping up on the Democratic side, they started urging their folks to stay home and vote there. And having talked to a few people, I don't remember who was telling me this, but looking at even some of the early voting numbers. It did not seem like there were a lot of traditional Democrats crossing over to vote right. in the Republican primary, at least early. But that's been a fascinating factor in it, and not only has it played out on the Republican side, it's affecting the Democratic side as well.
And we will on Monday. We're going to have someone in breaking down that closed primary because some people may not understand exactly how it works, why we do it. So we'll be talking more about that. Now, talking Tuesday, would you have ever thought that in a May primary that we would all be scratching our heads on who in the world is going to get the nomination? Kevin?
I think we all kind of realized, and I've kind of gone back and forth in my own mind about what I think is going to happen on the Republican side. I think we knew that was going to be a very competitive race. And I think we're going to be up late Tuesday night into Wednesday morning before that race can be called. But no, I never could have envisioned that we'd be having that same kind of conversation and I'd be doing that same kind of mental going back and forth in my mind about who's going to win the Democratic gubernatorial primary, because I can see a path to victory for either Jordan or Baloukov.
There was a point when it was like, who's going to even be the sacrificial lamb on the Democratic side? And Baloukov, he enjoyed the 2014 process. He liked it. So it was kind of became obvious he was going to run again. But I don't think any of us sitting here, the week before the election would have thought that a newcomer from North Idaho with less than two terms in the mm-hmm. legislature would be challenging and possibly beating the Democratic nominee from 4 years ago.
Do you think that's really a possibility that Jordan could win come Tuesday?
Yes, I think it's a definite possibility.
She's got momentum. She's got attention. There's just this kind of romance around this campaign. I think it's activating people who hadn't been paying attention. I think it's a real possibility.
And my sense of it, and this is kind of anecdotal, and it's sort of what you get through the social media channels to some degree. I don't think that the stuff that we're focusing on as reporters, the endorsements from legislators, the turmoil within the Jordan campaign, I don't think that matters very much to people who are committed to voting for Jordan. And I think the folks who are really, the hardcore Jordan supporters, I mm-hmm. don't think this is resonating with them at all. I don't think it matters to them. It's about the candidate.
Is she motivating a maybe group of people that may not necessarily have come out to vote, maybe younger people, more women? I mean, especially with that social media aspect, that we have some candidates that, I mean, they're older, frankly, right? That's not necessarily in their wheelhouse. This tends to be more in her wheelhouse.
Well, and think about who votes in a Democratic primary, right? Who votes in a primary? It's your most passionate, strongest held members. And if you remember back in the Democratic caucus, Bernie Sanders won Ada County and Idaho because he activated mm-hmm. the base.
Right. And that's ironic, too, because, A.J. Baloukov was a Bernie Sanders delegate at the National Convention in 2016.
Right,
but Bill's right. I mean, I think there's something fundamentally changing in the Idaho Democratic Party. And it may not change Tuesday. This may not be the election cycle where it does change. But I think that trend is definitely, it's trending towards candidates of the Paulette Jordan demographic, as opposed to the A.J. Baloukov demographic. Whether this is that tipping point election or not, and a continuation of what we saw in the 2016 caucuses, I don't know.
I think that's
where I see the path to victory for Paulette Jordan.
And I think the other kind of issue, overarching issue, is that, Donald Trump came out of nowhere and won, and he kind of broke the rules for winning. And I think there's a lot of people who are kind of looking around and saying, well, wait a minute, we don't have to do things the way things have always been done. And so I think in some ways, Donald Trump has created this atmosphere where people say, hey, anything is possible.
I do think that's true, right? So moving forward, Kevin, when you talk about that change in the Democratic Party, what could that look like then down the line? I mean, could we actually at some point see more Democrats in higher powers of position in Idaho?
Well, I don't know. Don't get carried away.
Right?
Here.
I know.
Right. And going back to what I said before, no matter who winds up winning this primary on the Democratic side, he or she is going to have a really difficult summer ahead of trying to bring this party back together, because they don't have, they have no margin for error going into the general election. for the governor's race. And it spills down into other statewide races, like the state superintendent's race, where I do think Democrats could have a shot. Mm-hmm. You know, there are coattails. This party is going to have a lot of work to do.
So they can't fight with each other if they actually want to have a path to victory.
They're such a minority party. They can't afford to fight. Republicans can afford some of this infighting. Mm-hmm. We've seen it for years. Democrats have no margin for error.
You know, I think we're all tempted to look at the shiny new thing. And I think the danger in Idaho politics is to look at what's new and interesting and forget that Republicans are so dominant and so powerful in this state, and even the strongest Democratic nominee is going to have an uphill battle. And if you think about Paulette Jordan, there's going to be more scrutiny and more attention on her record and her background, and she's going to have to withstand that now for the next 4, 5, 6
right.
months.
I will say, what do either of them have to do once they win that nomination to actually be a viable candidate? Because I think sometimes, being based in Boise, we live in the great state of Ada, right? I think we sometimes live in a bubble. She has a bigger fight on her hands outside of Ada County than she does anywhere else. And so does A.J. Beloukov. What do they have?
Any Democrat does.
What do they have to do to be a viable candidate?
Well, the first thing they're going to have to do, whoever wins, aside from healing within the party, is raise money. I mean, A.J. Beloukov's Sunshine Report is inflated largely by his own personal donations mm-hmm. to his campaign. You look at outside donations to his campaign, not very much. And Paulette Jordan, granted, she only got into the race in December, raised only about $350,000 in that period. So, yeah.
That's nothing compared to the Republican candidates.
You're going to have to increase those numbers, because whoever gets the Republican nomination has proven that he's going to raise money. Or he's going to put his own money into the race, in the case of Tommy Ahlquist or Brad Little, who's loaned to his own campaign. They're going to set the price of the general election, whoever comes out of the Republican side, and it's going to be hard for the Democrat to match dollar for dollar.
What happens if Jordan gets the nomination and she's gotten this national attention? Could we potentially see national dollars coming to her?
I think if she does win the primary, and I'm not saying she will, but I sound a little bit like I'd already predicted, and I'm not trying to predict that. But
there's no predicting here.
Exactly.
There's just not.
But I think a young female native candidate has access to money that other Democrats running in Idaho do not. And I think it's entirely possible you would see a flood of national money coming into the state, which would be controversial.
That's a whole nother topic and conversation.
But it would change
that we'll
the dynamic.
Having.
Well,
yeah.
And you saw it to some degree in her Sunshine Report this week. Her biggest donors were tribal nations, including the Idaho tribal nations, the Chobans, the Coeur d'Alene tribe, but a lot of Indian tribes, a lot of tribal governments from outside of Idaho. I would expect that would continue were she to get the nomination.
Well, Kevin, get some rest, because you're back here Wednesday morning to break down what happens Tuesday night.
I'll be phoning it in.
Yes, you will be. Literally.
Yes.
Thank you both. Bill Manning with the Idaho Statesman, Kevin Richard with Idaho Education News. Always appreciate you coming down and breaking down the issues of the week here in Idaho.